That those who are currently closed and only processing people that are family joining, that is joining the members that have already submitted their application before the date of the closure of those offices. So that pie chart 10A is giving us that outlook of saying, where are the people going to apply for asylum statistics? I mean, for asylum protection. The following slide then try to analyze the trend in terms of the new arrivals. You will see that we had a peak in around May, and then as from June going towards December, then the figure started to decline a bit. And also the following slide is also giving us a summary of that decline. We then looked at the statistics across the 3 years, 2013 as well as 2014 and 2015. Our focus there was to look at the peaks, which quarters of the year do we experience the peaks, which quarters of the year do we experience the decline. And you will see that between quarter two and quarter three, we tend to experience the decline, which our biggest decline was in this year, in the 2015 calendar year, which was 9,840. At the end, I'm not sure if I had a pointer, because I think we don't. Okay, hopefully we'll follow. But that last block will show then that the biggest decline of 9,800. But also in 2014, the decline was in quarter two, as well as in just between quarter two and quarter three in 2013. And then we looked at the decline by years now, moving away from the quarterly breakdown. And again, 2015 shows the biggest.
Have you a little bit? You see, it's when you have got those sharp rises and declines. Do you mind talking to them? What do you think are the reasons as well? Not just simply to raise them as declines or sharp, but without talking to them, what do they say? What is that they are saying to you?
Okay.
Just indicate, if you know, if you haven't researched or analyzed them, fine. Just proceed.
That's fine. That's fine by nature, person. Our observation is that most newcomers will be visiting South Africa to apply for asylum in the beginning of the year, in January, February period. And as we move towards March, April, then people who are visiting South Africa to apply for asylum will tend to drop, and you will see later in my presentation, we argue that the reason for that the peak is only in the beginning of the year, it's when the schooling season open, and also people who are seeking employment will be undertaking that initiative to look for new employment opportunities. And we argue that the reason for that is most of these people are job seekers, not necessarily people who are seeking international protection. So that's why we then experience the decline in those periods. And then as we move closer to December, that decline is always steeper. So that's our analysis as the environment that deals with asylum seekers. The decline by years, we have picked the following years, 2013 to 2015. Over this period, we have introduced what we call efficiencies. In these efficiencies, we started prioritizing the people that are coming. As they come, we then process them speedily and give them decisions. And we feel that process of efficiencies started to discourage people from coming to apply for asylum, because then they know that their applications will be processed speedily. However, then when I talk to the other slides, you will see that meant then that the people that have come before these years then have not yet been processed, and they fall in what we call backlog, because then we prioritize the newcomers. We started prioritizing the newcomers over this period. And also I will talk to 2015 later in the presentation to say why even further steep decline in 2015. And I think the following slides will then give an analysis of that steep decline on that year. On this slide, we then made comparison over the period of 10 years to say in and around 2006 or in 2006, we were experiencing the figures of newcomers at just 53,000, and that dropped to 45. And in 2009, between 2009 and 2011, we started experiencing high numbers of asylum seekers. Our analysis over this period, 2009-2011, is that it was mainly the Zimbabwe economic meltdown that contributed to these figures going up. And also we might argue that the political instability in Zimbabwe also contributed to this. But also additional to that, in Zimbabwe there was a collapse of their health system, and there was what we call cholera outbreak. And most people then felt that for them to get assistance, it would be best that they come to South Africa. So majority of these people that we see in 2009, 2010, and 2011 are Zimbabweans. What we have done then, late 2010, was to introduce the Zimbabwe Special Dispensation to try and deal with those categories of people who we feel that they are not necessarily falling into the category of international protection, but rather people who are seeking other assistances in South Africa or opportunities. So we have introduced that. It, to some extent, it has assisted in dropping the figures to below 100,000 in 2013, 2014 up until 2015. We then do the breakdown by gender. We felt we needed to analyze what type of people that are coming to South Africa to seek asylum. And we have noted that majority of these people are male at 67%. And female at 32%, and we will further break that figure down. We zoomed into that gender breakdown by nationality to look at where these particularly males are coming from and females are coming from. You will see that the majority of females that are coming to seek asylum in South Africa are coming from Zimbabwe, followed by the DRC, Nigeria, and Ethiopia. But then when you go to the block of the males, you will then see that Ethiopia overtakes Zimbabwe, and Zimbabwe becomes number two, and Nigeria retained the third spot, both on females as well as males. So then the rest is the breakdown of the top 10 up until you, on the males you reach to Ghana. So it mainly focuses on those two categories in that slide. And then we then further break those figures into age groupings, and you will see the black piece of the chart that represents.
Is that something that one country overtakes Zimbabwe on the base of males? Am I having the same picture table?
Let me see your slide. It's slide number 10.
Yes.
Yes. If you go to the column females,
okay,
you'll see that Zimbabwe is number one, followed by the DRC, and number three, Nigeria.
Yes.
Then you go on the other side, you'll then look at the males. Okay. Ethiopia is number one, followed by Zimbabwe, number three, Nigeria.
All right.
Yes. And then we then break them by their age groupings, and we then see that 80% of these new applicants are young adults between the ages of 19 and 35. And here, Chairperson and the members, our argument is that vulnerable people and people who are running from persecution are not under normal circumstances coming from that category. These are active people that are not vulnerable, but rather will be seeking employment opportunities. That's our analysis there. And the group that we should be, if we are to look at people that are vulnerable, should be a group of interest or focus would be your mature adults between 36 and 65, as well as the elderly, that is the 66 to 100, which is constitute only less than 1%. Then you will have accompanied minors that will be coming with the adults at 6.5%. We further broke the statistics down into the top 10, and the top 10 focusing at all the figures that we are receiving globally. And now combined both females and males, Zimbabwe then the same number one spot, and it is always the gray block there represents the status that has not changed, even in the previous financial year, even in the previous calendar year, that gray block, position movement indicator, this one, it represents the movement that has not changed In the 2014 report, those countries have retained those positions: Zimbabwe, Ethiopia, Nigeria, and the DRC. Bangladesh has moved up from position 7 to now position 5, and Pakistan's status has not changed. It has retained position 6. Malawi has moved down from position 5 to position 7, and then the rest have not changed in terms of the top 10. If you look at the 2014 report, you will see that comparison as well, to say what was number 1 and what is number 2 now. Then we then felt that we need to focus on the continent itself, excluding Asia and Far East. And in there, we then have our top 10 once more, top 15 once more. Zimbabwe is number 1, followed by Ethiopia, Nigeria. You will see SADC there has 6 member states that are sending us asylum seekers, being Lesotho, Tanzania, Mozambique, Malawi, DRC, Zimbabwe. And we argue that DRC, we feel that they might have a case. We can argue that there is some instability that may lead to people to flee. But the rest of the other countries, your Malawi, your Tanzania, Mozambique, there's nothing in particular as it relates to international protection. So is the case with countries like Ghana, like Uganda, like Cameroon, and Senegal. So, but then we felt that it is critical that we do that analysis of the top 15 sending countries in the continent, so that we look at who is coming to South Africa from the African continent. Then we compare the African continent with the rest of the world, and you will see that 85% of the asylum seekers are coming from the African continent, followed by Asia at 14%, and then you will have Americas at just 0.1, and then Europe, that mainly would be Eastern Europe at 0.04%, the total of 22 asylum seekers. They will be coming from your Ukrainians and other Eastern Bloc countries. This year is further breaking that the previous slide down in terms of where in the continent. For example, SADC constitute 46% of the overall percent that we spoke about in the previous slide of 85%. And then you will see that it's followed by East Africa, where you find Ethiopia, where you find Somalia, constituting that figure of 22%, followed by West Africa, and then South Asia will come at number 4. Then we move from there, from the analysis of the newcomers, we now go into the work of our refugee reception offices, where status determination is done, at slide number 17. That slide then will tell you in terms...
Do you mind just doing us a favor? I just before you get to that other section, to go back to the slide of the top 10.
Okay, sir.
Let's go to the slide of the top 10.
This one. This
yeah,
one.
That one. If you could just run on the left from the top. More or less, what is there that they are presenting as an argument for seeking protection? Just generally, just going down. If ever you have that kind of information.
I do, Chairperson,
okay.
Generally.
And what is the position of the party?
When you talk to Zimbabweans, yesterday I got a call from a British journalist. He was at the showgrounds, and he wanted permission to come inside and take pictures. And he was running a story of people who were coming to seek web visas in South Africa, and I'm saying he has already interviewed those people, and they are saying they are there to look for work and study visas. So I'm saying, generally, the people that you find in our centers, they don't hide the fact that they want to regularize their stay, and the asylum regime becomes the easiest way to do that without necessarily having to meet the immigration processes and regulations. Zimbabweans, they will not lie to you. Very few of them will then talk to the tensions between ZANU-PF and the MTC, but generally they will tell you straight that we are coming here to get papers so that we can attend school, so that we can seek employment, and you find that. And hence, when you go to the performance of the RSTOs, you see how we determine those cases as fraudulent, abusive, as manifestly unfounded, because then we say, out of their claim, nothing constitutes the protocols and conventions for international protection. From the onset on their story, they don't mention anything related to political instability or being persecuted on the basis of religion or gender. They just make it clear we are here looking for employment. And because our processes say you must listen before you can reject, then even when people say we are here seeking employment papers, we need to process them first. And in processing them, with the capacity that we have, we are forced to give them an asylum permit. And that asylum permit is a condition that came because of the court judgment in 2004 on the Washenuka judgment, where we could not finalize a particular case of a Zimbabwe woman with kids, and the court forced us that we should allow that woman to work and study while we are finalizing the case, because our legislation requires that we should have finalized that case within 180 days. At the time we were taken to court, it was around 4+ months. So then our failure to then implement that condition as instructed by the court individually meant that that became a blanket condition. So everyone we could not finalize within the 180 days or on the same day when we adjudicated at RSTO level, we then allow that person to get that 6 months extension, and that 6 months extension, Section 22 permit, comes with the condition to work and study. Ethiopians, the tension is between, I can't remember the other name of the community, but there's an Oromo community. Everyone argues that they are Oromo community who are marginalized by the current government. Their land is taken from them, the Arab agricultural land is taken from them by the ruling party, the ruling government. And so some sort of ethnic tensions between themselves as Oromo community and the ruling party. But when you interrogate those cases, you find that this is a prepared case. The Ethiopians, it looks like they are being processed into the country and in trying to avoid the word smuggling, using processed. When they come into the country, they all will not produce their passports, but they will have ID cards that look fake, that you can see that it has just done when the person is here, and then they will submit those documents. And they will come with the agents. And so they tend to come with the same story. And again, when I go to the adjudication, you will see that at a particular stage in 2015, they were getting the highest approval. But then when we introduced measures to monitor and control the decision-making at the centers through the intervention of the standing committee as empowered by the legislation, then the approval of the Ethiopians declined. So is the number of newcomers. It felt that it looks like what has happened is that when they started realizing that they are not getting decisions, then they communicated back home or whoever was processing them to the country to say, it's going to be fruitless for you to come to South Africa, because once you get here now, we are no longer getting the approvals. The decisions are likely to be manifestly unfounded, or they are likely to be unfounded, which I will talk to on the coming slide. Nigerians, there's an interesting cases. I was talking to my colleagues this morning. We were sharing some of the interesting cases. Gidi Mavuso had his own when he was working over the weekend, as you indicated, those that were dedicated over the weekend of Nigerians, talking to our principals about why they are here, and also their request to vote, and all those things we can talk to them. But Nigerians, they don't have a particular claim. You will think that because there is what you call Boko Haram, then they will talk to that. They're not talking to that. They are just here. They want to study. They want to work. The other one has taken his case to ministry and requesting that minister must intervene, and submitting a fake document. that pressure must be put on us to approve this person. We have finalized the case. The failed asylum seeker, he does not have any claim in relation to international protection in 2015 in July. But then he continued somewhere to find a way to produce his own fake document that he carries around to say he legalizes himself in the country. And with that document, they don't even mention what you would say, Boko Haram. Now, TRC, they will make claims in relation to abduction, rapes that are happening in the eastern DRC. I forgot the region now, closer to Rwanda. But mainly their claims are related to that. They are not coming from northern parts of the DRC, Kinshasa and stuff like that. Their claims are related to what is currently happening in the eastern DRC, which then most of them either consider them as unfounded, meaning that our officials could not get the gist of the story and therefore refer the matter for appeal, or some of them will grant, so as we do with Somalis at point 8. I will not talk to Chairperson, I will talk to Bangladeshis and if you allow me to have time, then I can proceed. Bangladeshis, last year we had a bilateral with the Bangladesh government, and they just put it formally to us that they're requesting that we allow them to export labor force into South Africa. So Bangladeshis, there's no international protection, but what is happening is the Bangladeshis nationals are coming here to open businesses and all sorts of things. And it looks like if you engage the officials in Bangladesh, it looks like there's something that is facilitated from within the state the state itself. So again, in the past, we used to grant statuses, but when we started monitoring, then we were able to argue with the improved country of origin reports that there's no conflict in Bangladesh, and also their claims are not aligned with international protection conventions and protocols. Pakistan, I have not focused much on Pakistan. For them, they are just seeking a work permit. So they come there, they say we seek asylum. And then when you start interrogating them, there's nothing coming out in terms of the conventions. But in, as I say, once someone comes to our offices seeking asylum, we have a responsibility to process that person. And because there are these two statutory bodies, depending on how we have processed that person, it's either a person who's abusing the system, which is abusive, a person who is fraudulent, or a person who is manifestly unfounded. And that those three types of cases will go to the standing committee. The standing committee only have four members servicing five centers. That on their own, they receive those figures, plus 70,000 in the past years. So it becomes difficult for them to process those, even the most straightforward cases, speedily. And as a result, then, it allows people to buy time. And while they are buying time, they find other ways to regularize their stay in the country, either through marriages or getting employment or getting education, and therefore they are able to go to the courts and argue that as much as I did not have a claim, but now I am integrated in South Africa because I'm married, so you must allow me to continue to stay. And then those are the cases that we are dealing with. As Chairperson, I say, when you get to our adjudication in the coming slides, you will see that almost 90% of these people that have come to South Africa, they have nothing in relation to international protection. Malawians, it's similar to Zimbabwean claims. There's nothing in relation to conventions. All they are saying is that they are here to seek employment and they want to regularize their stay. That's why we you will see that also they are still complying with it.
Yeah, I just thought that members, that we must just simply get that people breathe, you know, just to understand what these people are actually saying in our offices, other than just simply recognize that we have got people coming from these countries, but what it is that they are saying, and that it holds water, anything that we should really talk to, or we just having people that just like South Africa. Yeah, you can proceed.
Now, out of these cases that we have received in 2015, we have adjudicated 60,649 in that corner, that's the total. Out of that, we have approved as people who are deserving refugee status 2,499 for the whole year. And then from there, you will have the total number of people that were rejected. Out of the 60,000 that were adjudicated, we rejected 58,141, almost everyone, with the exception of this 2,499. So the difference there is this 2,499 that was approved. Now, how we have rejected them? Now, that top 10 slide that we're talking about, you see the breakdown is here. In the first column, you will have what we call abusive applicants, the 64. These are the people who will be finalized, they will go back to their country, then they will come back and claim again. On the same claim, nothing changed in their country, but they feel that now they want to return to South Africa. And then they return and we process them and we then determine that they are abusing the system. We have here this claim and we stand by our decision. And this category mainly are the people that we call fraudulent applicants. Fraudulent applications, 10,908. These are the people who, as much as they submitted their claim, they can't talk to their claim. It's like it was prepared by someone else, but when you interrogate him, he's saying something different. Then you then say, that means then it is fraudulent. Maybe someone prepared you for this interview. Now that you are being interrogated step by step, you are unable to talk to your story, and then you say there's a fraudulent. Manifestly unfounded. Again, these are the people that will be able to come with a story that is in line with convention. But where he comes from, he's coming from a country that has all the protections, all the rights. For example, a Namibian coming to seek asylum or a Zambian on the basis that my government cannot protect me religiously. But we know that every religion there in those countries is protected. So it's those kinds of things. You make a claim when you know that the country of origin report does not support the claim that you are making, but the claim itself is in line with conventions and protection and conventions and protocol on international protection. But however, we know that your government, you are saying your government is unwilling or unable to protect you. We argue that given our country of origin report, your government is willing and able to protect you. So that's where you find your manifestly unfounded cases. They are total in all these three categories. They go to SCRA, the Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs, and they are total is 44,048. And then, as I say, this year, we are talking about four members. For them in a year to deal with this figure, including the backlog of the previous year, then it becomes a mammoth task. Now, moving from the SCRA statistics, the decisions that are finalized by our RSDOs according to those three categories. Then you will have these people here in this category, which we call unfounded under Section 24, Subsection 3, Subsection 6 of the Act. These ones, they might be coming from, for example, the DRC, and he argues that he is coming from the Eastern DRC, and he articulates the story, but the RSDO cannot make a clear determination whether this person qualifies or doesn't qualify. And he feels that at a more senior level, another appeal or another adjudication process can come to a different conclusion and therefore allow this category of people to be reheared in terms of the appeal under the appeal board. So these are the people who might have a claim, but our RSDOs at the centers could not determine whether that claim is genuine enough to warrant an approval. So we then refer these cases to the appeal board. As I said, these will be your straightforward cases. in this category, which is your section 24, subsection 3, subsection 8, the 2,499, these are your cases that have managed to be adjudicated successfully and they will get the refugee status. Now, those figures that are just presented in the previous slide, we then group them into a pie chart and you will see that the workload of the standing committee is 54% of the total that we receive, combined with 17% as well as the 0.11 abusive cases. And then here the black pie is the work of the appeal board at 23% of the total caseload of 2015. This year we talk to our integration approach, which is the approval. These are the people then who then qualify for your refugee IDs, this category here, the approved cases, the travel documents under the international. So that category then qualifies for protection as refugees in the country, and it's only 4% of the total that we have received. Now, we further zoom into that adjudication by looking at the trends by month. You will see the red line. It represents the MU cases, and you will see that they were up, and then they went down. But I want to talk to that red slide together with the green one, the one that ends in April. What has happened is that before the 2015-2016 financial year, the centers were reporting to the provinces, and ourselves at head office would then provide oversight and the policy support. But in terms of operation, the centers would report to the provinces. Our minister then undertook a decision by around March that head office should also take control of both the oversight and policy support as well as daily operations at the centers. What we did then, immediately we then invoked sections of the legislation where SCRA is allowed to monitor the performance of the RSDOs, that is the Refugee Status Determination Officers. When we started monitoring their performance, we started just late in March, around 24 March, and that has contributed to this. Then we dropped the total number of approvals by month and by year into at least average around 15 a month. And majority of that total that we have approved since April up until December is mainly your family joining. These are not newcomers. These are people that were declared by those who already have the refugee status. So what has then happened is that since they were already declared, they are in the file already, when they come to South Africa, they say, we want to join under Section 3C of the Refugee Act. We cannot deny them that opportunity to join their principal applicants. Either they come as children or they come as wives of the principal applicants. So we have a responsibility. We cannot then say, we cannot join them. So mainly that's what has happened between April and December. Of course, with very few approvals coming from countries like Somalia as well as the DRC. And then the black one is your unfounded cases. Unfounded cases, as I said in the previous slide, these are the people that our officials could not make a clear distinction whether they qualify for protection or not. When we started introducing that monitoring, we felt that there's some corruption taking place here, because what happens is, given that the process of appeal is a long process, people who will not qualify, if there's no monitoring, then they can be decided as unfounded. Once you are decided as unfounded, that's where the biggest backlog that we are experiencing in terms of the number of years is taking place, because there the process requires that there's a quorum and the members must hear the case. That means the client can come with a lawyer, he can come make new representation into the appeal board, and then the process then takes even longer. So when we monitor the countries that do not belong to that category, where there's nothing in their country of origin report that supports any element of protection, then it also dropped, same as the approvals were dropping, and that contributed then to both the rejected fraudulent cases as well as the rejected manifestly unfounded cases going up. Can I proceed then on this slide? Now, we on this slide, then we break down the approvals by centers. As I said, Cape Town as well as Cape Town as well as PE are the offices that are closed. Where you see Cape Town statistics is combined with Port Elizabeth because they are using the same server. And there we are not receiving newcomers. So in Cape Town, RRO, firstly is two centers. Secondly is that these are only family joining because we are not taking newcomers. And then in Durban, then it will be a combination of newcomers as well as family joining. And you will see there that approval is sitting at 71. In Cape Town and PE, the approval rate is sitting at 328. Where we have most activities, it's in Marabastat. Marabastat, we have received 43,233 cases, and we have approved 1,762. This is Marabastat. This column. Next to Marabastat is another office that was called Crown Mines. It has since moved to the Tiro Show Grounds or the Tswane Interim Refugee Reception Office in full. We call it Tiro. So also here, there are no new activities that are taking place. It's only what we call family joining. People who are coming to join those that are already in the country and mainly were declared. So our biggest or the busiest office is this one, Marabastat, and I'm sure members of the portfolio committee have been at Marabastat, and they will remember this. They will know these figures. Next to it is Musina, which is next to our Bight Bridge. But you will see the activities are very low there. The total figures that we have received is 9,221. We have not approved a single person, including that means there has not been a person who applied for family joining at Musina. So there has not been any approval in 2015 in Musina. And that might impact why or influence why people do not apply at Musina, rather opt to go to Marabastat, where the chances of approval are better than as compared to Musina. Then we compare the approvals by years, and you will see that the 2015 statistics, they drastically differ than the previous years in terms of how we have determined the cases, and it is informed by the monitoring mechanisms that we introduced. Usually the SCRA cases will be sitting at, you will see that they will be almost 50-50 with the unfounded cases, but that picture in 2015 changed completely. You will have majority of the people decided as manifestly unfounded. That means then they need to be reviewed by SCRA, with a lesser number of people that are going through the appeal board. And the approvals as well, the total percent or the total figures dropped. You will see the average was just around 7,000 in the past years, up until 2015. If you take that 9,700, 7,006. To 2.4 in 2015. So we felt that we just need to also to present that so that maybe that picture makes sense. Here, what we have done was to break the approvals, that 2,499, by both the center, the nationality, and the age. Now, you will see, and gender, sorry, yeah. So you see purple, this side that is divided by purple, it's female, it's females, and then the other side by blue, it's males. The total females that we have approved is 707. The total males that have been approved is 1,792. And most of the approval is taking place at this bracket that I was saying, for us, this is the bracket of concern, this age group, between 19 and 35, which we call young adults. That's where approval has taken place. And then you'll see that it is just followed by 36 and 60 and 65. So is this just mainly the breakdown of saying, where are these people coming from? We have concerns with some of the approvals. If you look at countries like Zambia, you look at countries like Kenya, you look at the figures from Ethiopia, you look at the figures from Zimbabwe. These are concerning figures to say, how has it been possible for these countries to get approval? However, as I said, Chairperson, and the members of the committee, that the instruction for her office to oversee the operations in the center only came in March 2015. By that time, some 3 months or so have gone by, and that's where your Zambia approvals, your Zimbabwe approvals are coming from. But after that, then we managed to put some controls in place to make sure that we do not approve willy-nilly. However, Section 36 of the Act empowers us to review some of the decisions that have been taken. So all those we feel that are questionable, we have already taken them through the review process, which we know is not going to be an overnight process because there's no capacity at scratch. But on our side of the department, we have taken those to the standing committee to say we wish that you relook at these cases and the claims that were submitted to see if then they really warrant protection in the country. I will proceed if the Chairperson is still looking. Okay. Now we just presented the picture of this decline to say where does it start. In just pointing fingers, it's more or less the same that I've presented in the previous slide. To say when we started implementing the controls, the approvals were sitting at around 800 a month, and they dropped to 6, 6, 3, 24, 8, 15, 10, 11, 10. And as I say, we don't have control on those ones because majority of them are people who are coming to join. They are principal applicants, and they are already declared, so we do not have any grounds to say they cannot join. But people who are coming, newcomers, then if you feel you have a claim, then we subject you to a more strict adjudication process. And if you don't pass, then you don't pass. You can take the case for judicial review, and then we will deal with the case there. Now,
you must remember sometimes to tell us the what you found in the course of the 800 that you have stopped, actually. It's not enough just to say put controls.
Mm.
Surely there is something noted that was happening. You must be able to inform us.
We are of the view that the overall management of the centers while they were reporting under the province was not up to scratch. As a result, then it allowed our officials to do as they wish, including where they might be issuing decisions where they not positive decisions or approvals where they were not supposed to issue approvals. So, generally, what we have done was to manage closely the daily performance of the centers, which was not the case before the beginning of the financial year 2015-2016. Now, as I say, then becomes a process to then say, why did you approve when you know that this person or this claim does not meet the international protection? And that's where I'm saying the files that we've pulled now are starting that process to ask individual RSDOs to account for the work that they have done over this period. Of course, it's not only over this period. It extends to previous years because you will talk to 2013, you will go back as far as 2011 when the decision was taken by the department that the centers must report at the provincial level. And that's where I think we had a problem in terms of managing the operations of the centers. And we would not want to sit here and fault our provincial managers for failing to manage, but we feel that we gave them a complex area to manage without understanding what takes place there. Their expertise and qualifications were not necessarily suitable to to understand the issues related to international protection, the convention, the control, the production of the country of origin report. So once we took then the control of the daily operations, we brought all those things back, and immediately then it changed the picture of our approvals as well as our newcomers, because we are talking to people who will communicate to those that are still to come to say, if you wish to come to South Africa, you must know that the chances are you might not get your Section 24, unlike I did, because now they've tightened up their processes and this and that. So we feel that that also influenced the steep decline in the total figures of the 2015 calendar year. Officials? No, not particularly because of this. Yeah, but of course, because of daily corruption, there are cases that we are dealing with. Just recently, we have opened a case as well relating to an official who was stealing security paper while we were working in the center. So we do have those cases, but in particular, in the work that was taking place here, we have not yet made any breakthroughs. Now, we felt that we need to talk to where are these approvals coming from, and those are the countries, the top five. As I said, the Ethiopians are at number one in terms of approvals. This is the Oromo claim that we as the Oromo community or the Oromo ethnical group are deprived of our rights and our land is taken by the ruling party and all sorts of things. Then here, Somali, we still argue that as much as there are international efforts to stabilize Somalia, but Somalia is not stable enough for people to return to Somalia. So they are grounds for approval. So are the DRC nationals. Our only concern with the DRC nationals, it is difficult to determine between the DRC Kinshasa as well as the DRC Congo Brazzaville. Sometimes you might find that there is overlap in terms of persons there. Now, Congo Brazzaville might find themselves benefiting from the claims of the DRC. So it's something that we are still battling with to be able to distinguish between nationalities of the DRC and the claims coming from the DRC, separate from people who say Congo Brazzaville. So I can't read much between that 190 and that 614. It might be that there's overlap between these two nationalities. Then it's Eritreans. Chairperson, I have not looked much at what kind of claims are coming from Eritrea. It's 44, but as I indicated, since we're monitored, we have not approved any Eritrean. But I will have to go back and see what type of claims are they advancing that were warranting approvals. Now you will see, out of the total number of Ethiopians that came, which is this 9,322, we only approved 1,001. And that for me also impacted on the newcomers, because then when they started seeing that those two blocks are not talking to each other, as from April, then it might happen that they started informing their fellow nationals that maybe South Africa is no longer a destination to come to, might start looking at other countries. Somalis, you will also see that out of the 2,000, we approved almost 620. DRC nationals, 614, as well as 614, yes, as well as the Congo Brazzaville and Eritrea. So we felt we needed to compare what we approved with what we have received, so that then the distinction between our work in terms of approvals as well as negative decisions. Now, we then zoomed into the SADC region approvals, and that's where I'm saying our concern is and our work is currently at, to say who are these Zimbabweans, because we want to get to their files and understand who are they. Even before invoking Section 36 of the Refugee Act that allows us to review, but we need to know who are these people and what are their claims. DRC, as I said, give and take, we will look at them just to quality assure, but there is a claim in the eastern DRC. Malawi, we are doing the same. Mozambique, we are doing the same. Tanzania, so is Lesotho and all these countries, because we argue that the SADC region is stable with the exception of the eastern DRC. Now, if we are receiving these types of claims, Madagascar, Botswana and Zambia, we need to know what informed the approvals, and that's what we, that's the process that we are undertaking at the moment, and the members. Now, this is approval by age group, gender and country again. You will see that majority of the approved cases of females, 284, they are between the ages of 19 and 35. Again, this is the age group that we are concerned about, but they are coming from the DRC, and these are the claims related to being raped and all sorts of things. And then Zambia with one case, followed with followed by Zimbabwe. And then males, we only have, males, we only have DRC there at 330 from the southern region in terms of approval. Then the other approvals by males are coming from other regions. Then we then zoom into the performance of the two statutory bodies, which is the Refugee Appeal Board as well as the Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs that deals with the reviews as well as the Section 27. Now, under the Appeal Board, the cases that they deal with are unfounded cases. Now, you will recall the figures that I submitted that are appeal cases, which the total caseload was 14,000. They have only done, out of 14,000, they have only done 1,700 cases. And this is how they finalize them, according to the standards. And you see that most of their work, they have rescheduled it. And there's nothing much that has happened here in this statutory body. And you see the red block there talks to the deficit. It means then, out of the 14,000 for 2015 calendar year, 12,361 cases, they have not been crushed by the appeal board. Almost the whole caseload of the 2015. That adds to the previous year backlogs, and therefore these are the people that, though at the department level have been finalized, but the appeal board cannot decide whether then they have a claim or they do not have a claim. SCRA is a similar situation. You will have their total performance. I mean, before you go to total performance, their total caseload is 44,048. They have done 20,815. Their deficit is 23,233. And we are saying in that 20,000 performance, it includes cases that are coming from 2014 calendar year. So therefore, it does not necessarily mean that they have done 20,000 of the 44. It just gives an indication of the work they have done. It might happen that 50% or so of that 20,000 performance is coming from 2014 calendar year, and therefore also their deficit is very high. And therefore these are the people who will continue to extend their permits in the country until the decision comes from those from SCRA as well, just like the appeal board. Here, these are the people that have received the refugee status over the years, and they feel they qualify for refugee status indefinitely. Refugee status indefinitely is informed by the fact that when you look at the country of origin report, you'd reach a conclusion that there's no end in sight in the conflict or in the situation in your country of origin that has brought you into South Africa. And therefore, you then feel that you do qualify after being in the country for 5 years continuous stay to apply for Section 27C, which is a refugee status indefinitely. The refugee status indefinitely paves the way for you, that certification, to apply for permanent residency through the refugee regime. And now those, that's the performance in the over the years. These are the total number of applications received over the year is 2,104. Out of that, you will see that the figure that is considered is more than the figure that they received in 2015, meaning that they also took some of the backlog from the previous years. It's 2,237. People who got the certification out of that 2,237, it's 684. This chairperson and the members, it's an administrative process, and there are concerns here that before you grant the certification, it need not to be done administratively. It is a process that needs to be involved so that we know who now is graduating from a refugee status to be able to qualify to apply for permanent residence in the country. So we are looking at that to say how do we manage Section 27C so that it is not just done at an official level and it becomes just a normal administrative process, and therefore once you qualify, then you are granted, and therefore you can move to apply for permanent residency, which will lead to naturalization, and we naturalize people that we are not even sure where they come from, because the education process itself does not necessarily guarantee that you have given us the truth. Out of that, then, only 681 that were not granted certification. And then, out of that, also 802 were not granted certification, and also their status was reviewed under Section 36 and was withdrawn. And these are the people we feel that then circumstances in your country of origin has changed. You don't qualify for both the certification to be a refugee indefinitely, and also you don't qualify for protection. It's high time for you to return to your country of origin, or you go through the immigration legislation to regularize your stay if you wish to continue to stay in South Africa. Now, then the last group is people who still qualify to be refugees but don't qualify, which is the 70,000, don't qualify to be granted refugee status indefinitely. And therefore, they will just continue to be refugees because we feel that there are positive improvements in their countries, and it's likely that they might return to their countries of origin soon. So there's no need for them to be granted status indefinitely. And we felt we have never reported in this category, and that's why it relates to the figure that I was talking about, that is granted Section 27C, and then moved to apply for permanent residency. Now, these are the people who have applied and received permanent residence after having granted Section 27C refugee status. It's 5,846. This database does not sit with us. This total here, it sits with civics. We are trying to get to know who are these people, where do they come from, and as you see, we only know the number, we only know the year, but we don't know their age, the time of approval, their gender, their nationality, so that we are able to go back to the file and match that claim and with the person and see that where we write over these years to grant permanent residence to these nationalities. As I say, the total is 5,846 of the people that we have granted between 2003 and 2015 permanent residency through Section 27. And by all indications, because we needed to do a system change to even get this certificate, because we have never reported on this, we don't know who are these people, and the work is underway to be able to attach at least the file from the refugee side to this statistics, so that we have a sense of who is getting this the PR through the refugee regime. And then here we are talking to people that are already refugees. These are refugees. They qualify for refugee identity documents as well as refugee travel documents. And it's just a summary of the performance overall of the refugees that we have in our database and how and when they have applied and where they have applied for refugee IDs. And the total there that we have that were received is 16,000, and what we have managed to issue is 8,000. We experienced a backlog between June, July, as well as August, up until September. It is this period where our officials had to be diverted to Operation Fiela, and it became difficult for them to perform both the Fiela task as well as our task. But the Fiela operations have gone down now, so you will see that our performance is starting to improve, and we are at least in December we managed to issue the biggest number of IDs. The picture is more or less the same when it comes to travel documents. We don't have what we call backlog. Yes, we do have cases that have exceeded the 90 working days, but we are issuing travel documents as well as IDs. But we felt just for information purposes to share these slides, but there's nothing much on these two slides, both the travel documents and the refugee IDs. Now, it has come to our conclusion then as follows, that during the 12 months from January to December 2015, the number of refugee applications for asylum substantially dropped. However, the number of rejections increased significantly, with the number of approval cases, which has always been low, having been significantly dropped as well. UNHCR has communicated to us on this decline, because the argument is that the global figure for approval is 12%. Ours is sitting at 4%, and they are saying they are concerned. Of course, we have responded to that, and we are prepared to respond even at any other platform where we are asked why our approval rate has declined. As we indicated, that it is informed by the types of applicants that we are receiving. Now, then we say the 2015 asylum statistics trends report points towards a decline in the registration of new applications for asylum. As I said, in comparison to other years, this is the most steep decline in the past 5 years. RROs are mainly overwhelmed by the high numbers of appeals and review cases who are not finalized timely at the level of the RAP and SCRA. The Marabastad RRO remains the preferred destination for new asylum applicants, despite all the challenges it confronts that include long queues and waiting periods. And we will know that Marabastad is always on the news for wrong reasons, but nonetheless, people still prefer to go to Marabastad while other offices are quiet. We also argue that if young male applicants will continue to dominate our asylum registration. And the report further confirms that nationals from the SADC, East Africa, West Africa, Central Africa, and South Central Asia regions remain the nucleus of our asylum population in South Africa. And we then conclude with that bullet point that the rejection rate stands at 96% of the total figure that we receive, with 73% of manifestly unfounded, inclusive of abusive and fraudulent cases, and a mere 23% of unfounded cases, in comparison to the 4% of approvals. And Chairperson, I will end there. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Yes, no, just to conclude the presentation by indicating that we're very concerned, particularly the last bullet, of the 96% rejection rate, because it's clear that we continue to put the resources in an area where we're dealing with people who are not supposed to be in that particular, using that particular instrument, and denying actually those who are really vulnerable and need to be protected. So I think we one way or the other, as a country, we need to change the approach in dealing with asylum seeker management, because as the presenter indicated earlier on, my colleague, that we interview, you know, randomly sometimes people who are claiming to be asylum seekers, and only find that actually these people were supposed to have applied for normal permits, but obviously because they don't have a permit dealing with low-skilled workers and any other in those categories, therefore then they abuse this particular system. So really we are thinking of alternative ways of dealing with this issue, because we're throwing resources, you know, in the water, one way or the other. Thanks.
Okay. So there are you, members. Of course, there are a few questions which I would have loved them to actually give you more information on them so that you are able to interrogate their report. But then I'll just reserve them to the end and so that I give you the opportunity to actually speak to this report. Honorable Nancy.
Thank you, sir. And say I'll be talking fine about something that I don't know. But here on my throat, it's very painful. I wanted to, I've heard the presenter talking about the corruption. Now, I wanted to know, are you talking about corruption in the boards which are reviewing? Is them who are doing the corruption, and if there's any corruption, what have you done? Because I've not heard anything, but I heard you talking about corruption, the review appeals board. Now, there are two things that I'm asking about, three things that I've heard you talking about, which I've interested. I've heard all this other than that, and I'm happy about the way you're presenting. I can understand. Mostly you're talking about Africa here. But I was interested to know what is happening about Europeans. Where are they in the picture? Because they're here, and they're protecting here. I know one of them was found to be a criminal that was being searched from Canada, but he was found somewhere here in the Northern Transvaal. I don't know how they call it now, Mpumalanga or what. But where are those? How do they get here, and how are you dealing with that? But then, I want to know, are there refugee camps here in South Africa? If they are, where they are? And then, what is the refugee ID for? What is this people doing with the refugee ID? I heard you saying they must get schooling and employment. If they are here, you are still reviewing, and they are in the camps, why should they work here? Instead of you verifying, and especially when you know 96% of them, it's false, as you are getting out of your investigation. So I need the clarification on this refuge. I don't understand what is it for. The refuge travel judgments. The refugees which are here, maybe you said for some of them are for protection and others are asylum seekers. Now when you are here for protection, where are you traveling to? What are you doing up and down if you are here for protection? And I think those are the issues that I've picked up, of which I thought they are of interest to me, just to understand, because I don't understand why would we have IDs and they will have to travel, why do they travel? Basically, where do these people stay if there are no camps? If there are camps, why do they have to go up and down? Thank you very much.
Honorable Salbe.
Thank you, Chair. I think I was also going to ask some of the questions that Honorable has asked. But I think on your presentation you have covered that only Americans, but only few, one or two, in Europeans. And I just want to say I am not convinced. I concur with Honorable Minister. Maybe the department can give us more steps. Because 98% of your presentation, it's about Africans. And it is true that people will move from one area to another for greener pastures. We have also South Africans abroad because of one thing, life. They want to get into greener pastures. Yes, the last bullet point is very, very, very worrisome. We are standing at 96%. On rejection. So then the question now is that what do you do with these people after we have rejected them? Because they will be staying in the country illegally. As we stated very clear from the beginning that they are here, some of them for opportunities, work opportunities. We can't run away from that. So if we are rejecting them, the rate is 96%, definitely sure I think the department must tell us what is the plan B. And I think you said Cape Town and TIRRO, they don't have a mandate, but you still give us 36 of those offices. How do you get those there while they don't have a mandate? That's the one that I need clarity to. And just another one, that after you have those who have gained permanent residence status, so do they qualify as voters in the country, or what is happening about them? Yeah. No, I think, Chair, because I know last week you have accused me of talking politics to the department, but I didn't understand. I didn't want to argue with you last time. So say, but this is politics, although it's from the department that they are presenting today, is that under normal circumstances, ANC will agree with me. But again, politics are always dynamics. That now it looks like as government, we are putting very strict measures against our African brothers, forgetting that before colonizers come into to Africa, we're moving freely. But now it looks like our approach is that we don't want them in the country. So now I just want to ask from the department, if you are putting these measures, doing your work as per the law of the country, I agree. I'm not penalizing you or accusing you, but do you have any engagement or engagements with your counterparts in those African countries? To say, for instance, in Zimbabwe, to say, hey, your people are flocking in numbers here. In principle, we don't have a problem. There are African brothers and sisters. We understand very well what is happening there. But really, really, what are the measures as a country that we are putting in place in order for these people to go back? You mentioned Operation Fiela, that at some point they assisted you on some point. I always against Operation Fiela because they are beating people, they are doing this to our people. So I think the department must sit down and strategize and come with other alternative approach. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Fickland.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you from the department. Also, there are only two questions.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the presenters. My question is, go around the sliding down on slide 6, where we see the declining. And then you give the reason that those people who are declining are people that seek jobs, who came in for jobs. Maybe they go back for holidays. Now, my question is, what skills do those people have? Are they professional, or are they just looking for any job around in South Africa? Then the second question is, South Africa has got 8.3 million people who are unemployed, especially the youth. Now, by allowing the asylum seekers to come and work in South Africa without professionals, do we think that's a good idea, or do we work with the labor office to see how things are going in the labor side? The third question is, okay, I'll ask this one about the skills. Now, if you also go to slide 22, I notice that you've got more males that are coming in. And you know, most of the South Africans, they get married without knowing. I'm sitting with two cases of people who are married, who never married before. One of them is 21 years old, who got married, and then Home Affairs said, no, you are already married. I mean, he was married when he was 16 years old, if you look at the ID. Now, what is the process? Do you monitor the people that are males according to their age, and is there no corruption happening around them? Because you'll find out if my daughter is old enough and then she's married without knowing that she's married. Mm-hmm. Do you receive cases like that? Maybe officials are also involved in this thing. Then, slide 25, I'm just worried about the slow pace of approval of applications. And how long does it take to approve an application? Because most of the people, when they ask for permits or asylum seekers for 6 months or 12 months, it takes the department more than a year to approve it. Now, what is the reason of that? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Akte, for your presentation. I was just wondering, you know, sometimes we speak to our fellow Africans, and most of them, when they come here in South Africa, they say that it's too adventure, because where they come from, it's a cultural thing that as men, at a certain age, I think from 18 years, when they reach 18 years, they must go and adventure other countries. So, really, I feel that somewhere, somehow, we are being abused. South Africa is being abused. Some, they will come as asylum seekers, not really for those reasons. It's just to adventure. Because they say that South Africans, they don't like to venture out. So, really, I feel that, you know, when we are interacting with them, that is the reason why they come to South Africa. It's cultural where they come from. And if you look in page 9, most of them are males, because males, they are being taken as warriors. You know, and when they come here, they will find their, you know, women to marry. I think it's more easier for them. And they will also look for, they will marry the South Africans, and then after that, especially Nigerians, they will go back and get their rightful women. And what really, you know, when you've been presenting, I'm asking myself, Nigerians, fake documents. You find those people with fake documents. What are you doing with a person with those fake documents? Are you, because those are fraudulent kind of tendencies, are you not arresting that person? Where does he get those fake documents? I think he must be arrested, because he's coming here to bring certain tendencies. Those are really terrible tendencies, especially Nigerians are bringing here in South Africa. Looking in page 25, you know, when you look at statistics, DRC, age, you can see the females and the males. They are, when you look at the trends, that is page 25, page 27, females DRC. They tell each other that, I think that is an age whereby people now start, you know, to look for cleaner pastures and that, 1985. And then, why males also? It's the males, it's about 248, females about 222, males is 248. So you can see that it's a trend that, you know, when you reach this certain age, destiny is South Africa. And then now they cite asylum. They cite that, are the males also being raped? I think really that one you should really try to throw some tips there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. And thanks to the department for a wonderful presentation. Firstly, I think with asylum seekers and immigration in general comes risks of criminals, people who are running away from their legal sittings, people who could be classified as terrorists, people like Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, and so forth. Now, my question firstly is, what are we having a risk management assessment assessing whether people are, while bidding as asylum seeker, because trained military people who might cause us embarrassment in future in the name of asylum seeking? Are we dealing with Interpol and all those agencies that monitor criminals and people that would otherwise be classified as tourists? Is there any vetting immediately that a person comes to the Department of Home Affairs and present themselves to the Department of Home Affairs? Because we are a country that should run with a rule of law, and under our constitution, and then we cannot just allow people into the country because we do not have a mandate from our own people to allow people into the country. Whereas perhaps we could have been exiled in other years, but my brother was exiled one time in Uganda, one time in Angola. They always stayed in camps, refugee camps. They were not allowed to work in the camps. They were taken as the refugees that were not allowed to work. So it is clear. No country just allows people inside as immigrants or as asylum seekers without any conditions. And then once we decide that person does not qualify, how then do we process them? Do we process them through security, vetting security, process? What do we do in order to avoid infiltration as a country? I accept that our constitution is generous. We are a very benevolent country. But a lot of people now are abusing our human rights culture. We've got to say, yes, we have a human rights culture, but these are the limits, and beyond these limits, we take action. If you break the law, we arrest you, like we arrest any person. If you do things fraudulently, like producing fake documents, we arrest you, rather than perhaps process you and say now you are out, and charge you for fraud. And because otherwise, really, we are not going to be in a position to manage this. But otherwise, it looks like we are doing a good job. Thank you. We don't have a mandate to allow people into the country anyhow. Our mandate is the constitution.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think all what is a little bit clearer here is that we are a sovereign country, and we respect other countries as well as sovereign states. And then when you have to cross borders, then there must be a regime that manages that under these particular conditions. I have few questions that you have not assisted me in asking them. I had a question. I think it was presented that the 1935, you are having question marks that they can't be African leaders because of their youthfulness. It looks like we expected that those that will seek asylum, then there will be the older age group. Now, my question is that the soldiers, the rebels, and those that are, let me say the rebels, or whatever you call them, soldiers that are actually up against the ruling party or the ruling government in the country. Ordinarily, in which age group would you expect them to be? And if they have been defeated in their countries, let's talk about this other country, Nkurunziza. Now that Nkurunziza is having an upper hand, all those people that have been defeated there that were fighting for whatever, wouldn't you expect them to be in that age group? That when they run away, then they will ordinarily ask for protection. That's the question that I'm having. And then the other issue is that you're saying that the RSOs or whatever, then that at certain times they don't have clear picture whether they must grant the refugee status or not. Now what I want to know, I think it has been asked in passing by UNES, just to put it much more clear, are we not sending persons to that corner there in Ethiopia, that village that they are referring to, that they've got problems, they are losing land, to go and research and come with an actual position to the department and say, because we are having people that are coming from DRC East, the eastern corner of DRC, don't we then as a department send somebody to DRC in that particular corner and go and research the status of that corner and the people that are staying there, what sort of identification they have, and what sort of language are they speaking, what blah blah blah, cultural and everything. So then empower yourself then to say, if a person claims to come from there, these are the issues that we are going to check. Are we not doing that specific thing? The other one is when you have issued travel documents to some refugees, is there a process of monitoring that they don't travel back to their original country? And if you find that they are doing that, what happens? Because if somebody is sought for refugee status, is running away from his country, but then they get a travel document and travel back to the same country. I mean, we heard that in last festive season. Then certain people were appearing on the TV that, you know, he has been disadvantaged, now he can't travel back home. But whereas what is having, he has been given a refugee, you know, a refugee permit or something like that. Now he wanted to go back on through Christmas back home, which is just, which is a legally contradictory thing. Are we having a system that manages these refugees that we have given travel documents? Where do they travel? Are they not in the countries that they are traveling? Are they not traveling in countries that are close by, adjacent to the home country? Are they not traveling to their home country again? And if we pick up those kind of things, then of course, the last issue that we just want to raise as well is the high number of undocumented people. Can we say that it's a consequence of our stringent measures of not approving these applications? You will surely be talking about 60,000. And then we approve 2,500. And then ordinarily we know that we don't have a capacity of tracing these people. All that 58,000 people that are in the country, then they fall into this category of undocumented. Just bluntly, let alone those few individuals that have marriages of convenience and shift from undocumented to something else. But can we then demand that our stringent measures, understand me correctly, I'm not saying that your stringent measures are wrong. You see, we just need to have correct consciousness where these undocumented originated, where are they coming from. They came and put themselves online for application. We rejected them because they don't qualify. Then they don't go home. Then they stay in the country as part of a undocumented people. Am I correct to explain it that direction? You can proceed, Mabuse, and answer those questions, including this one.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I'll try and answer some of the questions, and then Mr. Matumisa and Richard and Dion and Tate will add. No, Chair, maybe let me first begin by indicating the difference between a refugee and an asylum seeker. Because in the main, an asylum seeker is somebody who is seeking international protection, but whose status has not yet been determined. But a refugee is somebody whose status has been determined and they've been granted protection under our international laws. I think that those two must be made very clear. Now, the question then Honorable Ness raised was around, I'll ask Manda to deal with that one of corruption, but the corruption we are referring to is not the corruption in the ports. It's in the refugee reception offices themselves. That's the one thing, but you will expand on that. The second issue you raised relates to the issue of where are the Europeans. I think the slide 14 did indicate that we had about 22 people who came from the Eastern Bloc. I think Mr. Matumisa did indicate that in the majority we're talking about people who come from the likes of Ukraine and those areas. And obviously we had 5 Americans last year who had applied for asylum. But those countries really do not attract a lot of refugees because those citizens of those countries who are in the country, in the majority they have normal permits. You'll recall that, for an example, if you look at Americans and some of the European countries in the Western Bloc particularly, they have what we call, they have been exempted from visas when they come to South Africa. They can stay for a period of about 90 days, you know, on a visa waiver in the country. So they're exempted from. So you hardly have those kind of challenges. So they also stay for shorter durations. If it's longer durations, it's when somebody either has a spousal permit or they have any other form of permit that they have, whether it's a work visa or the intra-company visa or all those things. So they come under the normal immigration regime, not the asylum seeker or the refugee regime. Now, we don't have refugees camps here in South Africa, as you would know. So in the majority, that asylum seekers, when they're in the country, obviously some of them get integrated into communities. Once their status is then determined, that's why we are seeking to, for an example, to shorten the period in which when somebody arrives in the country, we make a determination on their application as quickly as possible so that if they are failed asylum seekers, then they can be returned to their country of origin. That's why there's a part there where Mr. Matumisa was indicating that failed asylum seekers are then handed over to our inspectorate for their return to their country of origin. So the deportation process kicks in when somebody is failed. Now the question is, what are the IDs for in the case of refugees? You recall that when somebody has been granted a refugee status, it actually means that they have all the rights, like South Africans, of access to employment, education, health, and other social assistance. The only right they do not have is the right to vote. So you therefore have to then give them some form of identity so that when they are transacting, whether employment, education, or banks, they have some form of identification, but also they are clearly indicated that this person is a refugee. That's why we have a special category of a refugee ID. Now, maybe there was a question that you asked, why should they work, as you're saying that 96% of Asylum Seeker applications are declined. Now, let's separate the refugees from Asylum Seekers. Why should Asylum Seekers work? We had a case, that's why Mr. Matumisa can refer to it, the Wachanuka case, where the mother had children, and they were coming from Zimbabwe. And in that case, the court then made the determination that while she was still waiting for her asylum seeker application to be determined, she has no form of income in order to look after the children. So therefore, the court insisted that we allow the person to actually work. So that is, was now extended to all asylum seeker applicants. So therefore, all asylum seeker applicants, while they're still waiting for their status to be determined, they have the right to schooling and they can work. So which is, in a sense, something that we would seeking to review in our legislation, because that's why we want to reduce the time in which we take to determine the applications to not longer than 3 months, so that we can then, during that partner period, able to return the individuals from where they come from. The issue, therefore, is what happens in the 3 months? Are we going to offer some form of social assistance? So we're still having some deliberations on that issue with the UNHCR. Last year, we had a bilateral with the UNHCR in Geneva, specifically dealing with that particular issue of the 3 months, to say what do we do so that we avoid a situation where we allow people to work while their status has not yet been determined, because you're trying to avoid a situation where an application has now been declined, then somebody says, I already have interest in the country, I'm working, I have this and that. So we're trying to deal with that particular issue as we move forward. Now,
just before him, I'm getting the story clearly now, but I'm getting the story clearly. But that's one thing, once more again. Just give me your definition, because you did from the beginning. But as I was saying, I've got this pain that comes in on and off.
So you mean the definition of the asylum
seeker? The refugee is one who his status has been determined.
Yes.
Asylum seeker, okay. And there are no refugee camps. So the asylum seeker is supposed to be in the refugee camp, if there were refugee camps, whilst she's still waiting for his or her status to be determined.
Well, many countries obviously use different methodologies when it comes to legal approaches. Other countries will say that an asylum seeker will sit in a refugee camp while their status is being determined. Also, even if after the status has been determined, some refugees will then stay in refugee camps in those countries. So South Africa took a decision which does not support the issue of setting up camps.
Okay.
So that's the policy that we currently have in the country. The other question that you have asked is, where are they traveling to? Maybe I'll combine that with the question that the chair asked. You would understand that obviously every person has got a right of movement. So once we've determined the status that somebody is a refugee, we are, in terms of international protocols, that are required to be able to give those individuals a traveling document. Yes, sure, they can't go back to the countries of origin, because that would be a violation. Actually, once a person can do that, we are monitoring that, and we will definitely take the status back, withdraw them into the refugee status, if somebody can commit such an act of going back to their countries, because they're not supposed to be doing that. But we've had a number of stories about what people do, because some people, for example, when they apply for refugee status, they would not even give you their passports, but they'll say, I left, you know, running away, I don't even have my passport. So there were stories about people who use our travel documents to fly to countries like Kenya and then cross over to Somalia and visit their families and then come back. So these are the people who definitely abuse. But where cases of that nature are confirmed and found, they obviously the refugee status of that individual will be withdrawn. But also, you know, you do know that some of the people who are refugees in the country are people who also serve in different bodies. Somebody who are some others are human rights activists, and definitely they have to do a lot of international work. So we do allow them to use that document, the traveling document for that. So I did answer the question of where they stay, because we are integrating the communities, and I dealt with the issue of the Europeans. On the issue of Cape Town and Tiro, no, we were talking about Cape Town and PE, not Tiro, because Cape Town and Port Elizabeth were actually closed. They were no longer accepting new applications, but they were dealing with those cases of people who are either renewing because they are already in the database, and also it dealt with the cases of those who are joining their families, and I think Mr. Matumisa did expand on that. Honorable Fitland, you raised the question that those who are abusing the system, what skills do they have? In the majority, the fact that they are abusing the system because they can't use the normal immigration processes, which is applying for normal work permit and things like that, it says to you that those in the majority is people with low end skills, whose category is not catered for, because if those with high-end skills, they apply for critical skills visas and all other relevant visas, and they get processed through our processes. So therefore, it's a big discussion that we're going to have. I think the President did indicate during the State of the Nation that this year the Minister will release a discussion document. It should be a green paper on international migration policy, and those issues will be fleshed out, because specifically in that document, we do have chapter dealing with the migrants with low skills, and so that we can be able to find a solution to say, how do we deal with that category in the light of the 8.3 million that you've mentioned of unemployed South Africans. Obviously, there are more males coming to South Africa as asylum seekers, and indeed, the majority of them get married. And this is a very difficult part for the Department of Home Affairs, because we cannot come and say to a person, when they approach us to book for an appointment to get married, it's difficult to say to a person, yes, you as South African, why are you getting married to an asylum seeker? We can't regulate matters of the heart. So we take it that these people really genuinely are in love, and we facilitate those marriages legally. Yes, there are cases where people are fraudulently, you know, find themselves getting married, but I think those cases have declined. In the past, they were very called popular. But what we've done is that we've tightened our process of getting married by ensuring that, one, we take biometric details on the form of the two people and their witnesses to ensure that, and by the way, witnesses must also have South African documents. In other words, it's a person getting married to a foreigner or an asylum seeker, plus the two South Africans who must actually witness at Parliament. So we take biometric details, because we're trying to avoid a situation where people come and say, I was fraudulently married, because the record will prove that you were physically present when that marriage was being conducted. Well, you raised the issue of being worried about the slow pace of approvals. I think the slow pace that you were referring to, I think we wouldn't want to mix the normal immigration visas and the asylum seekers. Because, you know, as I said, with asylum seekers, the turnaround time that we are now sticking to is the 3 months. I'm pretty sure that we are able to retain those who are failed asylum seekers. So I think we're improving the system. On the other side of the other normal visas, We have actually improved the turnaround times, particularly for temporary resident visas, to a period of between 4 to 8 weeks. So that part is actually improving over a period of time. But on the asylum seekers, definitely the period is 90 days. Honorable Rapoti, yes, you're correct. I think there are a number of people who come to the country for various reasons. Some of them is just to explore the country. You know, we have many cases of people who come from visa-exempt country, for example, where they come here on a tourist visa, and then they don't want to return back to their countries. That is why we've made it in the immigration laws that a person who came as a tourist in South Africa cannot change their status while in the country. The reason is being that somebody comes as a tourist and then they want to get married and or stay in the country or work. So we say that to that individual, if you want to work, go back to your country so that you apply for a visa to come to South Africa. We will then determine whether the kinds of skills that you have are desirable in the country or not. But if somebody comes here and then wants to change their status while they're here, it means they actually came under false pretense as a tourist, but actually they know that their intention was not to be a tourist. Honorable Gumede, I'm going to ask my colleague to deal with this issue of asylum seekers and the people who are criminals who come to the country. It is true. We do have a risk management process, but I think in the majority we do have cases of people who were either soldiers where they come from or criminals. I mean, the case in point is Mr. Kratcher, who was a fugitive who came into the country because using a Seychelles passport, because people who come from Seychelles, we actually exempted them from a visa regime. So I'll ask Mr. Madumisa, because those cases can, in a sense, embarrass the country, particularly the military ones. Then, Chair, you raised the issue of the rebels who are against their, what do you call, and I think you're right, Chair, in the majority, the soldiers will be between those particular age of 19 to 35. But again, I'll ask my colleague to deal with that question. I tried, I think, to deal with most of the issues that you raised, and I'll hand over to... Oh, on the high number of undocumented people as a result of our stringent measures. Chair, there's a difficult part here. When somebody is a failed asylum seeker, that particular individual is given a document that they must remove, they must leave South Africa within a certain period after their asylum application has failed. Now, in the majority of people, those people do not leave, because we do expect that our inspectorate will round them up and deport them. We had a case in Port Elizabeth where that was brought against the department, where failed asylum seekers were rounded up by inspectorate and taken to holding facilities so that they could be transported to Lindela for deportation. Obviously, there was a case that was brought against the department in that regard. So we are improving that particular issue, and so that we comply legally with the precepts of the law to ensure that we do not have litigation brought against us when we round up the failed asylum seekers. Because at the end of the day, you have a person in your catchment, in a sense, where you know that these people have now failed asylum seekers. You then allow them in order to re-arrest them again. So the issue is, it's better to deal with them while you still have them within your environment. So I'll ask Mr. Madumisa to deal with the other questions, and then and my colleagues. Thanks.
Thanks,
DG,
and Chairperson, and members of the committee for the questions. I will start with the last questions from the chair, and then move backwards. The reason for that is my understanding is that my DDG has answered in detail most of the questions that were asked in the beginning, and also to save time. Chairperson, we are saying we are putting a finger on this category, the 19 to 35, because we are concerned about it. We want to understand what informs that move from the countries to South Africa. And you are right in saying that, or the question, because that's the question amongst the reasons why we're putting a finger in that category, that what happens when our own troops are in the DRC flashing up rebels, M23 amongst others? Where do they run when they are being flashed there? Are they not running to us, the same people who are assisting to flash them out in the eastern DRC? We need to know those things. And also, you will know in Central African Republic and elsewhere that we are involved in peacekeeping initiatives, and sometimes using Chapter 7 of the UN Security Council, where we are able to enforce the peacekeeping principles. And in that process, then rebels will be amongst the people that are running away, or people that are opposing the ruling party at the time. So those are the areas we have not covered. We are in discussions with state security, the Department of Defense, because we are of the view that these, in particular, these two departments, they are the departments that are on the ground in the continent where, or in particular in countries where we are receiving these kinds of asylum claims. And given our shortcomings in terms of capacity to send our own officials in these remote areas of the continent, we feel that the reports that are already generated by our SANDF colleagues, our state security colleagues that are deployed in these areas, they can go a long way in closing that gap where we cannot go on our own. So we're engaging with them with an understanding that if they can be able to share some of the reports that are not at that level of confidentiality with us, to get a sense of what is happening and what are the challenges in those countries and what kind of people are involved if it's in conflict, in those types of conflicts. We would have wished that Jefferson, as part of the risk-based approach, that we are the ones in the forefront in these countries before people come to our country. When Kresha came to South Africa, we should have seen it in Seychelles, not only here, not already when he's here in South Africa. However, our capacity at the moment does not support that risk-based approach where we are able to filter people who are coming to South Africa long before they come to South Africa, while they are processing their visit to South Africa. But most of these people that come and seek asylum in South Africa, they come through normal immigration processes, and therefore we have noted that it's unlikely all these types of trends where people don't go back to their countries and then seek asylum in South Africa. So we are trying to close that gap in terms of risk-based approach by engaging the departments within government, in particular the two state security and SANDF, that are already on the ground, and that have officials that are deployed in these remote areas dealing with these types of conflicts that we are discussing here, and also generating reports for government, and see how can Home Affairs benefit from this report in the absence of us sending our own officials there. But the issue of sending officials in these areas to do our own research, it has always been an issue on the cards, but it's not that easy and straightforward in terms of deploying them, because these will be remote areas of these countries, not necessarily where we'll then send our officials. So we are looking at that person in short. But more importantly, we are saying this is the group that gives us concerns, the 19 to 35, and we need to unbundle more than we have done in this report to get to at least some more detail in terms of what informs their movement from where they come from to South Africa and what types of people that are involved in this flow, so that if we are to be able to get to understand whether we're dealing with criminals, we're dealing with people that are running from their government, and we're dealing with other forms of migration that is not necessarily international protection, we are able to make those conclusions and suggest to the department and our principals how to deal with that. A risk-based approach is linked to the response that I have given. We do try to, in terms of our processes, interrogate people that are coming to seek asylum through our immigration officials. But we have noted that there are gaps there, because we have seen cases of people that have managed to slip through. So that means, and we also we have gaps in that. as part of the UNHCR 10-point plan in terms of risk-based approach, point number three, we're supposed to put measures that ensure that we thoroughly interrogate people that are coming to South Africa. We have not yet implemented that 10-point plan, just the DHA, and we are looking at how best can we do that, because it will require resources from the immigration side, in particular inspectorate. So we have a risk-based approach, but we feel that there's still more room to improve on that risk-based approach and make sure that it's in line with other principles and prescripts elsewhere. People with fake documents, we deal with these categories of people, Honorable Rafferty, almost on a daily basis. As I said in my presentation, they are even bold to even approach our principals with these fake documents and say they need assistance while carrying the fake documents. We do hand over them to law enforcement, in particular police, but there don't seem to be achievement in that area. As a result, sometimes I guess we feel helpless because we don't see success in terms of convictions and processing them accordingly. But on our side, as the officials of the department, when we get them, we hand over them to the police services and ask them to then deal with them accordingly, because they have broken our laws. And
I think I have done enough
because the rest of the questions have been covered.
What Mr. Mavuse has said.
Okay.
Is there any specific question from members that feel that their question was not responded to? And Ms.
No, this one is not, I was answered, but out of what they've been saying about Krisha in particular, I thought about Janus Walus. Janus Walus is applying for, he wants to get out of prison.
Amnesty.
Walus is a fugitive who came here from Poland and killed the leader of the SACP. Now, do you have a plan, because you are part of the state security cluster, do you have a plan when Janus Walus comes out, that's from prison straight to airport, because he's one of those undesirable people in this country? Do you have a plan of that nature so that he can get out before he gets that money which he was bought about, because the money is here to pay him? I'm just interested about that. Because Home Affairs is the department that deals also with the issues, internal issues of the country. So in terms of Janus Walus, is there any plan? Because he's going to get out definitely out of this court. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think we should just watch out that we still have two items, and we are left with just above an hour. And I think the report generally, it has been informative to us. It's almost like a detailed analysis of the things for us to be able to make sense what is happening. And also, in one way or another, they have actually also indicated to us where they are lacking. Because if an official of Home Affairs sits with an application in front and then cannot make head and tail of the application, that means there is a shortage or a deficiency or a gap somewhere else in their system that needs to be dealt with. And then, like, you know, I wouldn't really like to say that the department should come back and report to us on the status of those areas or from the countries that are generating this asylum seeker. But I would love to say that they must make an effort to really get the details of those areas so that you empower yourself to be able to make the determination in time as well. And I think it is one of the most crucial things that we really need to assist us to process in time, take a decision. Although is that at the long run, Honorable Fitland, at the long run, it would be a system is when we have refused the status, how do we get rid of that person? I think that is also key. But I know that Honorable Saube has indicated that he's not in favor of rejecting and all that. But I think at the end of the day, what you will remember is that this country has got limited resources.
That is a problem.
And the resources, when they are spread in terms of the services that must be given to our people, they base on the statistics from State South Africa so that only adequate resources are placed for certain people that require this, so that then the resources can be distributed around.
Yes.
And then now, if all of a sudden you open a window and you have half of Zimbabwe in South Africa, because the way is through, they just give applications and then no rejection, and then you have got 500,000 Zimbabweans, then the question that will arise is, will your financial resources in the country give them the requisite services that will be required, because then they will add to your current capacity to service the people that are on your population register. Those kind of things. And again, as well, the biggest one is that while you respect other countries as sovereign states, exactly the same as them respecting South Africa as a sovereign state, will it be fair that we drain all the people of another country? Because if we've got better economic condition here than Lesotho, if there is no management of the flow from Lesotho to South Africa, you can have all Basotho's moving across the border and then run Lesotho now a dysfunctional country, because the population there, and then 75% of it have moved to Soweto. Those kind of things, will it be fair to that particular state? So those are some of the funny things that we are having that need a proper analysis. And when a person is a citizen, has got rights in the country, has got rights. And those rights is when somebody else comes from outside without any good reason, that person in principle is actually trampling on the rights of the citizen. Because now it's forcing that the country must share the resources among its citizens together with him or her and all those. So this is a big thing that sometimes probably it may need interrogation. Why do you reject? What are the basis of rejection? What are the legal reasoning why there must be a regime that manages the flow from one country to the other and all that? You wanted to respond to the issue of Honorable Nancy, because it has just come through the back window. Actually, it's, just a second, because now it's whatever. Well, but let us just manage so that we have time to talk to the immigration.
Ambazwang my colleagues and Pendula.
Come again?
Yes, I didn't hear them on my questions. One, I asked if they have any engagements with Home Affairs of Zimbabwe, Zambia, and so forth and so forth.
Okay.
Maybe if you do have spoken such a stage, come again. I will leg in the bumbus. Secondly, Ambazwang after they have given a permanent status in South Africa, so therefore, are you becoming a voter in the country or what? What is happening? But I think Chair would consider if we are saying, I agree with you on this perspective, ukuthi iproblem here is resources. But ke akungapanish phela abafowethu base-Africa because of resources. Akuhambe sokwenza ama-resources ma-capitalist because we know ukuthi i-Africa is very rich in terms of mineral resources. Kodwa siyazi ukuthi acontrolwa abantu abafuma. Asingayenzile mistake. Kumete nje sazoxoxanayo ngaphandle because it's very counter revolutionary. Thank you, Chair.
What you have just said now, at the end, I think it's a long road. A long road. While you are still living in a capitalist country of then you'll have these challenges. That the market is actually driving many things. Until possibly if there is any party that wants to go towards another economic system. But for now, you can't walk to the capitalism that's trapped. They have to come willingly and invest and do X, Y, Z. And if they don't feel happy to come and invest, they've got a right to withhold their resources. And then we suffer. So, yeah. And that's the future.
Thank you, Chair. Just quickly, I just wanted to check in the deportation, who's paying to deport these asylum seekers and the refugees? And then lastly, Chairperson, you touch on the Sotho people. I know I've mentioned this last meeting about the Sotho's who are flocking to the Western Cape and the other provinces. I have big problem in my constituency because some of them, they're forming gangs now. They identify each other by the blankets. If you're wearing such a blanket and then you belong to that camp, and then they start fighting each other. And they're selling lots of drugs like teak. So I know that is the police work to do. But now, I didn't see anything mentioning the Sotho in the presentation. I just want to see how we deal with that.
Okay.
All right,
I think you can just respond to that. But safe to say that, Honorable Top, the issue of about the person having status and it was mentioned that they have got all rights except to vote.
Except.
Barbosa actually spoke to that and actually even said that the question that was asked by Honorable Shambe and respond to that one. So, but I think it's the other questions I may not really bounce him out that whether it's answered or not. Let's hear them.
Yes, Chair. No, indeed, on the issue of the refugees, I did indicate that a refugee has got all the rights that South African citizens have except the right to vote. Similarly, with permanent residents, they don't have the right to vote. The only people who have the right to vote are those who have been naturalized. So the process of naturalization, obviously, is a different process. Now, on dealing with other home affairs and neighboring countries, yes, we do, Honorable Shop. We have bilaterals with different countries in dealing with issues. For example, we were now recently with Kenya. We are going to be having Minister when he comes back from Nigeria. We're going to be visiting a number of countries in the continent. When we started with the Zimbabwe dispensation, we had a lot of bilaterals with Zimbabwe, for example. There are a number of interesting things that also comes out of those bilaterals and how also the governments of those countries view the situation of their people in South Africa. Because in some instances, you would even assume that they encourage the movement to the South. For economic reasons. So that's the one part. We have had several meetings with Sotho as we prepare for the Sotho special dispensation. So we literally actually been in the Sotho many times now to prepare for the process. On the question of Janusz Malus, indeed, cases, people like those, when they are about to release from prison, obviously the Department of Justice will notify the Department of Home Affairs. Because when somebody is not stateless in the country, has no status in the country, remember that you've got people, for example, who are illegal in South Africa, but when they've committed crimes, they cannot therefore be just deported without them facing the consequences of the crimes that they've committed. But post their prison term, then they have to be handed over to the Department of Home Affairs for the purpose of deportation. other incidents that are a bit difficult. Because, for example, we had a case of Mr. Samuse, who was a fugitive that was also in the country, and has committed many crimes. And when we were supposed to take him over, obviously the courts have indicated that we need to get an assurance that when in his country of origin, whether he will not be facing a death penalty when he gets to his country of origin. So in situations like those, you know, it becomes very difficult just to do a direct deportation after somebody comes out of prison, because if there's a court a judgment that says that you can't deport that particular person unless you get assurance. The last part is that who's paying for deportation? Unfortunately, we have to pay for the deportation of all failed asylum seekers and illegal immigrants. We do work closely with most of the embassies, I must indicate, who help us to facilitate the deportation also. And recently, obviously, we've also been trying to deport those who are in the SADC region on by road to avoid the cost of flights, because we spend a lot of money annually. On the Lesotho one, we did speak to, we've got about 500 and odd asylum seekers from Lesotho, but in the majority, it's about 560. Yes. We do have about 560 applications we got last year from Lesotho, but in the majority, we assumed that it was because there was a lot of political instability in Lesotho last year, but it's not a norm that you would find Basotho applying for asylum. They hardly use that particular regime. I think on the issue that you talk about of those who are flogging to the funds, I think it's a matter, as you said, that the police will have to help us with. Thank you.
Okay. I think it's the Honorable Nancy Otoma can understand the issue of Janus Walus. You know that as long as he has been locked up there, it cannot be a straightforward deportation. Because you see that you may find that in Poland they have scrapped him out of their population register. If they don't want to accept him as one of their own, then you can't send him there. So it just simply will depend as well what is there that they are saying the embassy, if ever we have an embassy, whether they vouch and say, no, yes, he's our person, we know him, bring him back. And remember also is that at the time when he did what he did, he was in the country for a long period as well. And whether then he just take a decision that he don't want to go back there is another thing as well, that you may find ourselves getting involved in court and all those things. So it's not going to be a straightforward thing if he comes out of jail. And then it depends how he presents himself outside, how his country of origin as well behaves, and what they've done, what are the laws that they have. When a person has disappeared for so many years, what does their law say on citizenship and all that? So it's quite a good number of things that will happen. And we definitely just have to allow the relevant departments to process that particular matter when it arises. I think we should really thank the presentation that we have received, and we have interrogated it. Of course, we will never finish interrogating it because of the nature of the report is in detail. Every aspect of it generates a question, and we're really happy of the report that we have received, and we'll try to do so as we move forward as well to get specific data on specific time windows of the year, so that we actually see what is there that is happening. And the interesting part, of course, is the trend. We must talk to this report, pick up the trend, and talk to the trend. And again, that is the one thing that I may not have asked that I request you to actually talk to. Is the kind of these asylum seekers or refugees, whatever, those that have agreed. There are trends. This Tanzania looks like they come through Durban. they apply at Durban, majority of them. Then you have got the Zimbabweans that are applying in Western Cape, Cape Town, and PE. Those that you can ordinarily expect that they'll come through Pretoria, but then they are here. And those countries, some of them, then they don't have sea transport and whatever that you can play that the Zimbabweans have gone through the sea around and come here. But you see, the analysis is why a particular country, these asylum seekers, are in majority applying at this particular office and not the other office. That needs to be analyzed, studied, so that we can actually make a research, follow up them, is how do they actually get there? What is their route? And then so that there must be clarity. Thank you very much, and we hope to meet you on statistics sometimes in future, probably after the elections as well. And honorable members, then can we have a 5 minute just break? Yeah, just relax the legs, whatever, so that we can now start with the immigration. Okay. All right. What's that? Surprise.
Thank you.